Thank you, guys. My name is Jack Laird. I'm an alcoholic. I always love a meeting that starts with meditation, right? It's just the best to, like, invite God in the room. Like, it knocks those little bit of nerves off that everybody has when they speak. So on May 8th of 2012, I stumbled into Alcoholics Anonymous for what I'm hoping, and if I keep doing what I've been doing for the past 10 years, the last time. The first time was in July of 1996, right? And I tried every other possible way to get sober. Therapy, switching to powders, potions, pills, and plants. I tried leaning into athletics, leaning into sports. I tried buying new motorcycles, new cars, new surfboards, new girl. I would need the girl to be hot enough that you thought that she was hot so that I felt better about myself. Just trying to validate myself, everything from the outside. And it never worked. And I came in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous. The first time I came here, I was court-ordered. I woke up handcuffed to a hospital bed. I don't really know how I got there. I've heard some stories. We can talk about it later if you want. But I woke up handcuffed to a hospital bed, and I was facing some real time. I was 17 years old, and they wanted to try me as an adult, send me to 5 flat. So I was scared, and fear sobered me up for a bit. I stayed sober for 18 months that time around after being court-ordered to come get my paper signed. And, you know, I maybe did a little bit of step work, and I had a sponsor name, and I maybe followed him around a little bit, mostly so we could go to coffee houses and talk to women. No real wanting to change. And what winds up happening is that was my senior year of high school. I get into college. I go to college. I stop talking to any of the people that I was talking to in AA. I wasn't working a program. I wasn't invested. My heart hadn't changed. I didn't read the big book. I didn't understand the warnings. I didn't read the directions on the side of the box. And the cake that I made came out terrible, and I drank again. I got thrown into that school, wound up homeless. My mom, who got sober, came and found me, brought me back to New Jersey, brought me to a meeting. I went, got a job at a bar, got drunk. You know, this happens over and over and over again. I'm giving you the, like, snapshot of my story, because I just want, you know, anybody. I always believe that there's a power in, like, qualification. I need you to know that, like, I'm not an expert on the big book. I'm a guy that's got sober 10 years ago, happened to be blessed with getting, you know, sitting across the table from a dude who said, "Do you have a sponsor?" What I wanted to say was, "Yeah, I have 3 sponsors, leave me alone." But what came out was no, you know? And he said, "Can you stay sober till 6 o'clock tomorrow?" And I said, "I don't know, I can try." And he said, "All right, well, if you do, I'll pick you up. And if you don't, I'll pick you up. But if you stay sober, then we're going to go to a meeting." I said, "All right, cool." So he picks me up at 6 o'clock, and this Cadillac rolls up, and the window rolls down, and the most spiritual thing I've heard in Alcoholics Anonymous came out of this man's mouth. He said, "Get in the car." And that's been my experience. You know, I got in the car with a bunch of people, not just my sponsor, but my network, the people that I met in my home group. That, you know, I threw myself in because I was out of options. I had no other idea of how it was going to work. I was like, "Fine, I'll come. I'll make your coffee. I'll set up your chairs, whatever. I just don't want to live like this anymore." And when I told my sponsor that, he said, "That's awesome. That's the best place you could ever possibly be. Let's crack this big book." And I was like, "What is this guy, nuts?" You know? But he shared some stuff with me. And I want to talk about, when we read, I want to read some stuff out of Working with Others. Because I had tried this thing a bunch of other different ways. I've tried to come and just fellowship. And what I realized is I can hold my breath for about 18 months. Remember I said it was 96 when I went to my first meeting. Right, I'm 44 years old and could have like 20-something years sober. But I have 10. It's good. I'm grateful for it. But the point is that I tried it a whole bunch of different ways for a long time. Jails, institutions, car wrecks, you know, like lost relationships, lost jobs. They're not even lost. I know where they are. I just stopped going to them, you know? The entire big book speaks to me. And if it doesn't speak to you, find somebody who it speaks to and let them speak it to you, is what I learned. Because it's experiential. I can't come up here and tell you, like, you know, this is what a rose smells like. What am I going to say? It's floral? It smells like a rose. You got to smell the rose. Get in there and do this deal. And after he had convinced me that I was, well, not even convinced me, after I read the doctor's opinion, it was like, I'm alcoholic. That's what's wrong with me. For years, people have been saying, Jack, why don't you just stop? And I said, I don't know. Jack, is there something wrong with you? Definitely. But I have no idea what it is. And I read the doctor's opinion and I'm like, you know what? That's it. That I don't feel okay until I drink. I don't feel like you guys take a step back and that my shoulders aren't heavy and I'm not only just breathing out, like, I don't feel that restless, irritable, and discontent that the book talks about. When I read those lines in Bill's language, I fell in love with this book and fell in love with this process. Because it changed my life. But what kept it changed starts on page 89. And I'm going to just skip around a little bit in here. I'll tell you what pages I'm on. But this has been the thing that got me to stay sober, joyous, and free all at the same time, and it didn't cost me a dime. Practical experience shows nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as will intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when all other activity fails. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when all others fail. Remember, they are very, very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover and to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other are the bright spot of our lives, right? What an epic salesman that Bill was, right? First line of that just grabs you. A couple of pages later, you have like the part in the drug commercial when people say real fast. We'll get to that. This next part here, perhaps you're acquainted with drinkers that want to recover, right? I'm going to stop there and just talk about that, because that's what we're doing here. We're learning to work the big book. When I first started sponsoring guys, I was very new in recovery. There's a million different ways to do this thing, right? And whatever way your sponsor tells you to do it, I believe that's the right way and the one that God picked for you. My sponsor that I met first is one of these big book guys who does it like a triage, where I went through, because I was very willing, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous intensively in about 4 months. And when I was done, I started again. And I've done that for the past 10 years. I've since switched sponsors, but he has a very similar approach. Because my belief is that this stuff, this big book stuff, is to get all the garbage out of us so that we can serve you. You know, that we can serve each other, that we can serve God, that we can be helpful and productive members of society. And as a byproduct of being that sober, principled man who's looking to serve and not be served, I don't have to pick up a drink or a drug or any other mind or mood-altering substance. And that's amazing. I mean, that's the win. And I came here just for that. And like, intensive work with another alcoholic has done so much more than that. It's insane. It's insane. You know, it's not about the cash and prizes, but guys, I came in here with a garbage bag full of clothes and a 400 credit score. You know, I own a beautiful home on an acre of property in Monmouth County, New Jersey. I have two cars in the driveway, a wife that's 7 months pregnant, a motorcycle, a whole bunch of surfboards. And it's not about the cash and prizes, but it's about I didn't have two pennies to rub together. You know, I didn't. And more than that, I didn't have two spiritual pennies to rub together. I was broken and just like out of options. And like, I just don't want to live anymore. Life is gray. Wake up in the morning, like, oh, this day sucks. What terrible thing is going to happen to me today? You know, and you're walking around like that for years. This, working with others, is what lit me on fire. Because it's real. You know, you guys remember, I don't know if you can identify with this. You guys remember when you first got sober and the people that like love you most, once you really, not just sober, but when you first started, like your eyes started to open? Everybody has that person that came up to him and went, wow, you look great. Mine was my friend Erica. She walked up to me. I've known this girl for 30 years. She's a really good friend of mine, really good friend of my wife. So she walked up to me and she looked at me and she goes, "Jacko." And I'm like, "What's up?" And she's like, "I never noticed you had blue eyes before." And I was like, "I've known you for 30 years. She's like, "Yeah, but you were always looking down." And I was like, "Whoa." You know what I mean? Like, you can look people in the eye. That confidence, that your heart is positioned in a place where you're just like, "I'm here. This is who I am. And I'm okay with it." And that was all I had ever really wanted. Right? Because that's like the 3-beer mark forever. You know what I mean? That like where you're just like, yeah, it's a good day. You know? But mine ends with like a bottle of Jameson and a phone call and a trip to the other side of Asbury Park and like waking up in Virginia. You know what I mean? Like, that's what happens, you know? That's how I drink. So I'm going to skip ahead a little bit to the Micro Machines man talk, where it gives us a couple of warnings, and then we're going to talk a little bit more about sponsorship. All right, so we're now on page 97. The rest of this direction here is awesome, awesome stuff. For me to go over here from the podium would be like me sponsoring you, and I want to really get into like the meat and potatoes of this. The rest of that stuff is all direction and how you can sit down with a new prospect and talk to them. And it's real simple. For me, it's just about identification. You know, I use silly lines. Like, I walk up to guys in my home group and I'll be like, "So what brings you to the basement of a church at 8 o'clock on a Saturday night?" You know? And they usually say, like, some bad decisions. I'm like, "Yeah, I'm familiar with that." Strike a conversation. You know? I try to identify with them on another level. It talks about that a little bit. You know, it talks about... I mean, if I ever see a new guy in a Harley Davidson shirt, I'm going to walk up to him and be like, "What kind of scooter you got?" You know what I mean? We're going to talk about that. You know, and it says at some point in time, you turn your talk to how you, being me, like talking to somebody, used to drink. Why I used to do it. How it made me feel. How it made me feel at the end when it stopped working. How it made me feel when I'm looking at the bottom of a whiskey glass, swirling it around, looking at it like, "This is a bad idea. This is going to end poorly, but I'm going to do it anyway." Everybody identifies with that. Everybody identifies with the funny stuff, right? Like every time I talk to a new sponsee, I tell them a story. It's like I woke up naked on the floor of a dentist's office. It's a true story. I was bartending at this bar. I met this girl. She wanted to hang out. She was a dental hygienist. She had the keys to her boss's practice. We're hammered. They probably had other stuff there. I don't remember anything. But I remember getting there, and I remember waking up on the floor naked on the floor of a dentist's office, like checking for my kidneys, like, "Am I good here?" Like, but you know, again, that's how I drink. So it talks about that. You know, that first paragraph that I read is like all the hoorah, let's go sponsor people, and I'm telling you that's awesome, because it really does change your life, seeing the light turn on other people's eyes. That's where I was going with the story about Erica. Like, when you see a sponsee, like, really catch on fire for this thing, and really just, like, they're, like, beaming, like, "Yo, what's up, man?" I'm like, "Wow, you were the guy 3 weeks ago with a hood up, ripping cigarettes just far enough away from, like, the crowd that you could hear what they were talking about, but not close enough that anyone would talk to you. And I've been that guy so many times." And you see these people on fire. I like, blesses me so much when I walk into my home group and I see like one of my guys sitting down, big book open, with another dude. You know, that's how these founders wanted to be done from the beginning. Just two people saying like, "Yeah, man, I've been in that hole. Let me show you how to get out of that hole. You know, here's the directions for getting out of the hole." But here's our warning. You know, there's always a direction. There's a sales pitch from Bill. And then there's also kind of a warning. Top of 97. Never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you're doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the good Samaritan every day. And that doesn't mean you have to be rendered white as snow. That means you have to try. Try to be a good person today. I fail constantly. I call my sponsor and go, Charlie, it's like, you know, I got real snappy with my 7-month pregnant wife because she was asking me after I took my shoes off to take the garbage out. Seems stupid. I didn't yell at her. I was just like, oh, fine, I'll take it. You know? But like, what kind of answer is that? This is the baby we've been praying for. It's the wife that she was with me before I got sober. Like, have some gratitude, bro. Wake up. You know, but I'm emotionally driven. You know? Matt and I were talking. My buddy Matt came up with me. I want to thank him for that. And we were talking on the way up that, you know, this whole deal for me is not about, it's about, it doesn't matter what happens to you. It's about how you react to it. Because my reactions are what spiral out of control to me having a bottle in my hand again. So you have to act a good Samaritan every day. It may mean the loss of many nights of sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions of your business. It may mean sharing your money. It may be sharing your home. Frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time, day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she's neglected. A drunk may smash your furniture or burn a mattress. You may have to fight him if he's violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor and administer sedatives under his direction. That is the only thing that I didn't have to do on this thing. Like, seriously. It's literally the only thing. I had a guy come at me in a kitchen with a butcher knife that I was sponsoring. So I did have to fight that dude off. You know? And, you know, hospitals, sanitariums, jails. But it kind of, this paragraph kind of makes it seem like it's an inconvenience. And it is. It's inconvenient sometimes. But that inconvenience is my selfishness trying to let go. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm supposed to go for a rip with the boys today. I'm up early in the morning. Sponsee calls me, bro, I need you. Sorry, boys. We're riding another day. Same, like, surfing is like one of my passions. I can't tell you how many waves I've missed to help people. But one time, I decided not to, like, I was like, oh, I'll talk to him later on. And I went surfing, and I sat there the whole time like, I shouldn't be here right now. You know, like, you get that guilt. You get that thing in your... You get a conscience working the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And a conscience is a good guide. It's a good guide. Never feels good when you're doing something dirty. We seldom allow an alcoholic to live in our homes for a long period of time. I probably should have read that like more than once. I've had a couple of guys that I've tried to help out stay with me for an indefinite period of time, and it didn't really work out well for me or for them. So that's a really good thing to heed. But you know, I do let guys come to my house. My wife, you know, I said before, she was with me from before I got sober, so she saw this process change me, and she's happy to change, you know, to help change people's lives. Happy to start help changing people's lives. And I had this one sponsee, Rob. He's still sober. He lives down in Florida now, but I let him stay in my house. And I told him that once 10 o'clock comes around, that door's locked and you don't leave here. So he decided that he was going to leave. And I guess he went out through the window. He went and got a bottle. He drank. And he tried to come back in through the window. But I don't know how he made it out. I have those windows that only open like halfway. He made it out, but he couldn't get back in. So I just hear this voice in the night like, hey, Jack? And I come in there in like my boxers. I'm like, what are you doing stuck in my window right now? You know, these are the adventures that happen. It's funny. He wound up getting into the big book, and now he's taking other guys through the big book and is sober. You know, we all make crazy mistakes. I guess the point that I'm getting at here is that, especially in the wake of this past 2 years where we were like locked down and didn't have the fellowship that we had, you know, didn't have the high fives and the smiles and the coffee cups and the donuts and like all that stuff. And that fellowship got ripped away from all of us. And we kind of came these islands, right? But like, honestly, I'm a guy who stays busy, and I'm not saying that I thought about drinking because I did not, but I got dark when that happened. I got dark and sad and selfish again, you know what I mean? And like the people in my life that work programs, like Matt and, you know, other friends of mine and my sponsees and the guys that I work with and stuff like that are in the program, they carried me through, and that fellowship was created by reaching your hand out and saying, "Hey man, my name's Jack. You look like you're scared. Let me show you a way out. It's right here in this book. I'm not going to ask you to do anything I don't do. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I'm going to tell you to let's take a walk down this road called AA. And, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we carry this message to alcoholics. Practice these principles in all of our affairs." I'll close with this. This is the one that always gets me in sponsorship. Those people that know me know I have a tremendous faith in God right now, but if you knew me when I first came into the rooms, I would say, I can do everything on that board except for the God thing. God was created to explain what science couldn't explain yet, and the rest of you that believe in him are just naive. And I would fight you tooth and nail about that. I was religiously atheist. And I had this guy, his name's Adam. He's given me full permission to share this story whenever I'm at a podium. I was sponsoring him for a while. He wound up relapsing. I was working in New York City at the time, and I got off of the New Jersey coastline at Penn Station. I walked out in front of Penn Station, and I get tapped on the shoulder. "Hey man, you got a dollar." I turn around. I always love talking to those people. "Not only do I have a dollar, but I have a way out for you if you want. I've done this before. It's not the best way to live. You want to find a better one? Do you want to stop?" This time I turned around and went, "Hey Adam." He's 6'7". With like baseball mitts for hands. He's like the biggest Polish guy I've ever seen in my life. And he weighed 140 pounds. His belt was pulled all the way over, hanging down past his knee. And he had a tall boy in his hand. And he's like, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "Bro, listen, I'm going to work. Question is, what are you doing here? And what are we doing here at the same time?" And he said, "I don't know." And I said, "Well, let me buy you a cup of coffee. I got a little walk. You walk with me, you drink a coffee, we'll chat." I talked him into going to a detox. I don't know if he went that day, because I didn't see him again, and I thought that he might have died. But 2 years later, through my home group, I took a speaking commitment over to the Jersey Shore Rescue Mission, which is a homeless shelter in Asbury Park. And I said what I said before. "Hello, my name is Jack Laird, and I'm an alcoholic." And I see Adam's head go like this. And he looks good. I go up to him, I talk to him. I'm like, "Bro, how many times is God going to put each other in our paths before we start doing something about it?" He says, "I don't know, man, but can we start now?" I said, "Sure." So we went upstairs. We went through the doctor's opinion. That was 9 years ago. He's got 3 kids, you know, sponsoring guys. I'm fire for AA. Lives down in Florida. I'm jealous of that. Seeing the ripple effect of God's love through these pages in Alcoholics Anonymous is an honor that I don't deserve. It's a grace that I get to have. And it's something that I'm pretty darn grateful for. And I'd like to hear what you have to say. Thanks for letting me share.
Speaker usually goes to 7:30.
Oh, I'll keep going.
Yeah, we go to 7:30 and then we shoot.
Okay.
15 minutes.
No problem.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I thought I was stopping a half an hour, you know, 6:30 to 7. I could talk for another 3 days if you want me to keep talking. All right, so How do you start after thanks for letting me share? How about this? All right, I'll give you...
Second week here. You know?
I got you. Well, we're going to talk about how you get to that place where you're able to sponsor people. Still Jack Laird, still alcoholic. I mentioned it before. The steps are designed to take the things away from your soul, from your spirit, take the things out of you that are blocking you from being of maximum service to God and to your fellow man. I like to use the analogy of the garbage can that you have in your house when you're really drinking and you don't want to go outside. And you have like the layers, it's like a lasagna of beer cans and Domino's pizza boxes, you know? And it's stuffed so deep into the garbage can that when you finally are like, oh, I got to take that out, it's a real problem. You go outside to take it out, and you're shaking it, and nothing comes out because it's all packed in there. And I found out coming to AA, that's what I do with my life. You know, I take shame, guilt, remorse, failed opportunities, failed relationships, childhood trauma, and you know, the girl that got away, and I'm not as good as Jim is, and Jim's not as good as I am, and pack all that stuff all the way down so deep that when you try to get it out, you have to like reach your hand in and start pulling things out, like that garbage can. And that's sort of what these steps did for me, you know. Again, I said I did a third step prayer to a God I didn't believe in. And my sponsor said, it says, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood Him. And if there's three frogs on this log and one of them decides to jump off, how many frogs are left? And I was like, two? And he's like, no, three? Because he just made a decision. And I was like, this guy's over here talking about frogs. Trying to get sober, he's talking about frogs. But he kept saying to me over and over again, this is something that my first sponsor, Anthony, is still a dear friend of mine, He would say over and over again, I don't care what you believe, just do it. I don't care what you believe, just do it. It used to bother me. And I remember when I was newly sober, I was working at, you know those little like shipping container restaurants that they have on the boardwalk down the shore? I was working in one of those making Korean tacos during the Bamboozle Festival. With a line that seemed to never end. With like 30 days sober. And this guy, Kyle, who I used to party with, who knew that I was sober, knew that I was trying to get my life together, tried to hand me one of those lollipops that was like weed infused in it or whatever. And I almost put it in my mouth. My other friend's like, you don't want to do that. And I'm like, why? He's like, he told me what it was, and I got so mad. I was ready to like throw Kyle in the fryer, or like, you know, chop off one of his fingers accidentally with the chef knife or whatever. I was going, all these insane thoughts are running through my head. So this one good thought came through my head, and it was like, why don't you call your sponsor, Knucklehead? And I was like, oh yeah, that guy. So I called him and I said, Anthony, this dude, Kyle, just did this, and I'm going to punch him in the face. And he said, no, what you're going to do is you're going to ask God to remove it, and you're going to go in there and see how you can be of service to Kyle. And I was like, no, you didn't hear me right, you know? And I told him the story all over again. He said, no, I heard you. You're going to go in there and see how it can be of service to Kyle. And I'm like, this guy is nuts. But I go in there, and remember, I said it's like an Asian food restaurant. So we got like a pallet of snow peas in that day that had to be chopped for the rush when the concert let out. So, and he was on that prep station. So I go over, I'm like, Kyle, do you need help with anything? And the whole time I'm sitting there like, you don't know how close you are to get punched in the mouth. But do you need help with anything, bro? You know? And he's like, yeah, I got all these snow peas, and we have to chop them up before in the next 2 hours. So I'm like, cool, give me those things, and we start Julianne and snow peas. And I'm sitting there, and first I'm like daydreaming that Kyle's the snow peas. And then the snow peas, like, kind of just melt away, and I'm just sitting there doing this zenful same movement over and over again, and I completely forgot why I was mad. And I didn't punch Kyle in the face, and we had a good night. About 6 months later, Kyle walked into my home group. And I was the first face that he saw. I just think it's cool that God connected those dots. You know what I mean? That, like, he was like, you can't punch him in the face because you're the only one that can help him. And I wound up taking Kyle through the steps. He's doing well. You know, he moved out of the area and I don't get to see him that often, but he's doing really well. He's sharing this message. Lives changed again. Right around my eighth step, I'm still kind of like not believing in the whole God thing. I had a higher power, believed in the power of the rooms. I believed that my sponsor believed. There's something else that I felt like I needed to connect with for me. And I'm getting to this place where I'm a little bit uncomfortable. And I start doing this thing where, like, you know, you go through, like, your house and start getting rid of all the things that remind you of your old life. Anybody ever do that? Nobody else? Just me? Okay, right. You guys lie well, as well as I do. So I had these books that were all, like, bartending books of all, like, drink recipes. And I was like, I don't need these. And I had my friend Chris that we grew up together. We drank together. We bartended together. We got arrested together. You know, that kind of friend. I told him, I'm like, dude, I have these books for you. He and I had both been in the rooms together earlier on in our lives. And he thought I was talking about the big book. So he's like, I don't need your big book and your brainwashing and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, what are you talking about, bro? I was going to give you this bartending book, but whatever. And I hang up the phone. And again, I'm calling Anthony, like, I'm going to punch this guy in the face, right? Just like, use this pattern for me, guys. You know, I haven't done it yet, so it's been 10 years. So he's like, why don't you pray for him? And I said, Anthony, how many times do I have to tell you that I don't believe in God? And he said, how many times do I have to tell you I don't care? It's the middle of the day and I'm at work. I'm on a ladder right now putting on a roof. I can't talk. Pray for him. Goodbye. And I'm like, this, Matt knows him. That's why he's laughing. This guy, you know what I mean? And so I did this prayer, and it went something like this. God, help my friend. Cool, thanks. Because I figured if that didn't work, then I could call Anthony and be like, didn't work. Still want to punch him in the face. Didn't work. But again, somehow this process, which to me sometimes is very intellectually insulting, I look at it and I'm like, smarter than this. But I've seen some of the smartest people in AA talk themselves out of the spiritual solution to life because they're too smart. Stop overthinking it. Just let go and let God. Know all the silly things that people put on the wall. You're like, that's dumb. It's not dumb. You know what I mean? They're silly. But like the slip that people put on the in like clubhouses. Sobriety loses its priority. Think. You know? Think three times, not just one time. The first one's a bad idea if you're like me. So, Chris, you know, I pray for him. God, help my friend or whatever. And seemingly nothing happens. And then I'm driving down 71 in Asbury Park, which any of you have ever been there before, you can find whatever you want to on there. Whatever you want to. I see Chris walking down the street, you know, hood up, smoking a cigarette, close enough to people that he can hear what they're saying, far enough away that he doesn't have to interact with them. And I pull over, I'm like, dude, you all right? He goes, no, I was going to call you today. I want to go to one of those meetings. I took him to a meeting. He got linked up with a sponsor, took these 12 steps, started sharing the 12 steps with other people. He's the best man at his wedding. He's been sober for 9 years. I'm not here to brag about the people that I've taken through. I'm an extension cord. You know? And in the process of being that extension cord to link in people with God, is I sort of get pulled along too. You know, that's been my experience. Like, yeah, hard work is a necessity. You know, showing up for work on time is a necessity. Paying your bills on time is a necessity. Being cool to your wife is a necessity. You know? But beyond that, what I've done is I've trusted God. I've tried to clean up the wreckage of my past to the best of my ability and share it with other people, and I sort of get pulled along. So when Chris shows up, I'm starting to believe in God. This is somebody that I prayed for, and I didn't think it was going to work. And I got lit on fire for this thing. I did this one, you know, I don't know how you guys do it, but in the amends process, my sponsorship family does like the willing and able, willing and not able, not willing but able, not willing, not able. And we put them out on index cards in those categories. And then, I thought I was going to do like the willing and able ones, and then my sponsor told me to pray about the not willing, not able ones. You know what I mean? And they get moved around a little bit. But I think everybody has one of these. I had this one amends on my amends list. I had done most of the rest of them that I just didn't want to do. I thought the guy was going to beat me up, and I'll tell you why. Right before I got sober, we were roommates, and we were freelance pharmaceutical salesmen together. Drinking together and doing that whole good time. And we used to get these passive-aggressive post-it note fights that would turn into like full fist fights at like 5 o'clock in the morning when we were leaving for work. And one day I got fed up with it, and I got a U-Haul, and I brought it to the house, and I got all of my stuff and most of his stuff, and just left. And I didn't see him for years. And I was driving down the parkway one day. His name's Jay Miller. He's not in the program, so his anonymity doesn't matter. He used to ride motocross a lot. And there used to be this sign on the turnpike that looked like a KX-125 is like sticking out of the billboard, and it was like for like oil or something. I didn't even notice what it was for, because I looked at it and immediately started thinking Jay, and I had such a resentment toward this man that I started to boil up. You know, I'm just like thinking about this guy. I hate that dude. Like, you know, and then I'm driving like a savage on the turnpike, and all of a sudden, you know, it does one of those like 80 to 0 like situations where everybody slams on the brakes, and my tires are screaming, and I stopped right before hitting the back of this 18-wheeler truck, and I looked up and I went, in the back of the truck says Miller on it, and I was like, what are the chances of that? You know what I mean? Like, so I did what any good alcoholic would do, and I like got to work, and I opened up my big book, which I had in my car, and I'm flipping through the amends process to see if I can find some kind of loophole that covers, like, you know, acts of God, including the back of almost hitting an 18-wheeler truck. They're not in there. So I'm like, I gotta make this amends. So I go home, and I'm ready to make the amends. I'm ready to make the phone call. And I decide to look at my wife. I'm like, Gab, we need to go food shopping, because I'm balking. So she gets in the truck. We go to the store. We go food shopping. And I walk directly into him in the produce department.
Okay.
Like shoulder-to-shoulder collide. And I look up, and I'm like, what's up, Jay? And he's like, he's big dude. He's looking down at me. He's like, you look good, man. What have you been up to? I'm like, well, I got sober about a year ago. He's like, oh, dude, that's so good. What are you shopping with your girl? Like, I'm convinced this guy's going to kill me. And that's his reaction. So I'm like, listen, Jay, you know, as part of the process of this, I'm fumbling over my words, and he goes, yeah, my brother's in AA. You want to make an amends? He's like, let me finish doing my shopping. We'll sit down and we'll have a chat. That's all it took. I was convinced this dude was going to hit me with a tire iron. 100% sure of it. I fantasized the idea in my head over and over again. I even went to a gas station one time, and I roll up to the gas station about to run out of gas. And he was there, and I would rather risk pushing my truck or motorcycle than run into somebody that I haven't made an amends to, that I need to. So I left and almost ran out of gas. That's not freedom. That's not happy, joyous, and free that we talk about. So Jay Miller sits down with me. He says, listen, bro, I just got to tell you a couple things. He's like, first thing is that when we moved in together, we were homies. We were good friends. I would have done anything for you, and I still will. The second thing is, you were just about the worst roommate I ever had in my life. I was like, yep, that's probably true. And he said, but the hardest part of it wasn't that. The hardest part of it wasn't you stealing all the toilet paper and all of the paper towels and eating my peanut butter and throwing up on the floor or like waking me up at 3 o'clock in the morning or having random girls over or like leaving the doors unlocked or all the other ridiculously stupid things that we do when we're blacked out and don't care about anybody else whatsoever. He said, the hardest part was I was watching a person that I love die under my own roof that I pay the mortgage on. He's like, it wasn't the fact that you took anything. It was that I was watching you die. And I went, okay. I realized that I can be so selfish and self-centered sometimes that I don't even think about how my actions make other people feel. I'm so concerned about how your actions make me feel that I don't think about how my actions make you feel. And then I wonder why I'm alone. And I'd be lying if I didn't say that, you know, awesome relationship with God, sponsoring a bunch of people, active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I don't still do that on some degree. You know, but I have some tools to re-navigate myself now. You know, I still have these. So Matt and I were talking about this on the way up, like the 10th step call. I just realized that I'm like kind of organically taking my way through the steps, which is awesome. Thank you, God. A 10th step call is like the key for me. Because I'll make insane and rash decisions based on like anger, resentment, and fear. You know, and when I call somebody up and I'm like, Matt, you're never going to believe what this guy said to me. And I tell him the story and he just laughs and goes like, how mad are you right now? I'm like, real mad. Well, did you ask God to remove it? No, I'm just trying to be mad. Did you turn your attention on who you could be of service to? No? Forgot about that one. I think we're all on this path together to just remind each other. You know? We're all close. Like, you can, picking up a drink's easy. Easy. The not picking up the drink part is where you got to search your soul a little bit and try to find all those things that pull out of the garbage can and see how God's light can come into that vessel and fill it up, change you from the inside out. And how you can kind of stoke that fire by sharing it with other people. You know, my prayer meditation life has changed over the years. I have a bookcase in my house. I'm a little bit of a word nerd, and I also like to, like, I'm a little bit of a fact checker. I try not to do it out loud anymore because it's like annoying to be that guy. I have a bunch of books on Buddhism, Hinduism, Taoism, Christianity, Judaism, Muslim. I have a bookcase full of all this different spiritual stuff. And I've learned some stuff from all of those practices. Where I currently reside myself is, you know, I play lead worship at the church that I go to, which is like a non-denominational church. It's not an altar call. This is what I believe, you know. Whatever you believe is perfect, and God loves you, and right on, let's get sober. I don't care. You know, that's what I say to everybody else. I have one sponsee who lives up in Vermont. He's like a super, he's a Vermont guy. He's super crunchy. You know what I mean? And he calls him the creator. And he talks like Jeff Spicoli. So I talked to him in the morning. He's like, oh, I was up there with the creator today. And we hiked up to the top of Stratton. And then I snowboarded down. And that was like my time to meditate. I'm like, that's awesome. And like, I used to bust his chops about this. I snowboard too. But he's just like he's like a cartoon character of a bro. We sat down. He came down to New Jersey like a couple months ago. We talk on the phone. We FaceTime. And I go up there and he comes down here. And that's how we maintain our sponsor-sponsee relationship. He got sober down here. Lived here for 4 years. Decided he wanted to go back up home. He's been sober a long time. We came down here. And, you know, I've been sponsoring this guy for 8 years. And he's like, I want to do a mini inventory. I'm like, cool. So he wrote down a couple of small things. And he was sitting down. And he was talking. The biggest thing that we started talking about. And it was just like four things. It took us 10 minutes. But we started talking about balance. And I was talking about, yeah, man, it's hard. You know, life gets busy. And I'm balancing a wife. And I'm balancing a job, career. I'm balancing bills. I'm balancing the amount of time that I spend at church. I'm balancing the amount of time that I spend with AA. I'm trying to continue to talk to my sponsees. There's always, you know, that push and pull. Pulling you through. Alex, in his infinite crunchy wisdom, goes, you know what, bro? You're never really balanced. You're just balancing. And I was like, you stop, Yoda. You know what I mean? Like, it's those little moments, you know, it's taking guys through the steps, continue to reach my hand. I went to this like motorcycle ride this morning. It was a charity motorcycle ride. And I prayed this morning, you know, Lord, help me find a sponsee today. I need to get fired up about Alcoholics Anonymous again. I need a new guy. I need a new guy in the book. I got a bunch of guys who are stable and sharing it with other people, but I need a fresh one. And I show up to this motorcycle event today, and there's a tent over there, and one of the tents is the Jersey Shore Rescue Mission again. And there's this guy. He's like, hey bro, I don't know if you remember me. My name is Tom. And that guy Adam that you got out of New York City used to be my sponsor. I'm like, wow, really? And he's like, yeah. He's like, listen, I was actually meaning to call you. I'm glad we ran into each other. I was wondering if you would take me through the book. I'm like, I'll do it. This process is amazing. And it's like, it's surrendering to the flow. You know, it's not trying to swim against the stream. My current sponsor is a guy named Charlie. And he was the drummer for a very famous 80s hair metal band. I'm not going to say which one, doesn't matter. And he talks like that guy, you know. Good morning, rock star. What's going on? You know, what are we manifesting in our life today? But he's a big book thumping, you know, helps people all the time. Sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And recently, you know, he said there's a lot of people that kind of fall into the gap at 10 years. And he's like, so I want to make sure you're not one of those people. So let's start working on the emotional part of the component of sobriety. So we go out to his sponsor's farm on Friday nights and read Drop the Rock. And if you've never read that before, don't read it if you want to change. If you don't want to change. Yeah, strike that, reverse it. Don't read it if you don't want to change. Because there's all the things in there that you're like, I'm doing pretty good. You read that book, you're like, I am still failing horribly in that department. But it's really good. But one of the things we've been talking about over and over again is it's not about what happens to you, it's about how you react to it. You know, it's not about what you can bring, you know, what you can take from a place, it's about what you can bring to a place. It's that I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, a Catholic, but I was given the St. Francis prayer when I first got sober. That prayer is epic. It doesn't matter what you believe in, read that prayer. It flips everything over. It's not to be loved, but to love. It's not to serve, but be served. It's like written to an alcoholic. Because the only thing that gets between me and like an abundant and beautiful life, smiling and having a good time and, you know, having the same kind of experience in life that I perceive other people having, which is probably even wrong, it's just surrendering to the flow, trusting God, cleaning house, sharing it with another person. Get active in a home group. My all-time favorite commitment, and I actually filled up the time, my all-time favorite commitment is bi-weekly I have a commitment at the Seacrest Detox Center. Why couldn't I think of that word? And I go over there and I talk to a lot of guys and gals that are like still nodding out on Klonopin. And you think that it's not working. I used to go into the Monmouth County Jail and bring some meetings in there. And you think that it's not working. You think they're not hearing you. But what wound up happening is last weekend I walked into my home group. This guy walks up to me. I didn't have any idea who he was at all. And he was like, "Bro, do you remember me?" I'm like, "I'm sorry, man, I don't." And he's like, "Yeah. 5 years ago, I was locked up in Monmouth County and you brought a meeting in there. And I've been sober since then. I've been like going through the book and like I'm out now." I'm like, "Wow, dude, like we're just out here planting seeds." That's what I'm going to end with. You plant a seed and I'm in the process of doing that in my property right now and it's tedious. You plant seeds, you don't sit over them and watch them grow, you just water them. Just water them. Just keep feeding it. It'll grow. And my experience has been that I've grown through the 12-step Alcoholics Anonymous, sharing it with other people and watching them do the same. Now this is really all I have. Thanks for letting me share.